Chapter 29. Gerald of the Four Fires and His Calloused Bastards. As a commander, you will officially report to Gerald. In truth, you shall take your orders from me. All right. We took the faster way back to the fortress, not having to visit all the different districts. Hanman felt as though he'd made his point, I guess. The carriage rocked and juddered as always, but the feeling of coolness was still on me. It was a familiar feeling, and yet I couldn't recall a time prior where I'd experienced it. For as long as I can remember, my life has been one long chain of miseries interrupted by fleeting periods of forgetting. You find the things that help you forget. You forget in the drink, forget in the digging, and the fucking and fighting. Not that I was ever much of a fighter. I didn't like to fight unless I knew I could win. And most times that meant jumping out at someone or choosing someone I knew was weak. Not like Geffen at all. Geffen was the real fighter. The kind of fighting Geffen did, the way he would stand in the way of any challenge no matter how great or numerous, it was the kind that took true sand. I loved my cowardice far too well to fight like him. Loved it like I love my money. Like I used to love the drink. But that unfamiliar feeling of coolness was so familiar. I knew my fate was on me that day, that it was coming down upon me. And I was cool in my heart, as if I knew it would be terrible, but that it was also all right. I don't know why. You spend your whole life with your guts churning constantly like a pit of rotted snakes. Your only distinction between normal and very bad lays in how much the snakes writhe. At no point do they fully quiet, or depart, or die. And maybe that's the difference. Maybe the coolness is the last thing you feel before you die. And maybe that feeling is also the first thing you ever feel before you're born. Before your mother shits you out into the world naked and screaming. I suppose that's where the familiarity comes from. Maybe. What do you know of this general? Hanman asked. I know that those who assign little value to their lives call him Gerald the Mad, and that he's properly called Gerald of the Four Fires. I also know that the reasons for one name aren't really any better or worse than the reasons for the other. Hanman nodded and drew the curtains shut. The inside of the carriage was suddenly pink as the outside light bled through the red fabric. Yes. Certainly don't say the Mad anywhere around him. He is a humorless man. But like most people, he has his uses. He is predictably erratic, which is a wonderful trait when applied correctly. You must know how to deal with him, though. I cannot watch over you every minute. Right. So don't speak to him like an asshole. He watched me carefully before answering. Udo, how much do you know about him? Do you know why he is of the Four Fires? I heard he burns his enemies after he's killed them. No. Not after. I had nothing to say to that. Listen to me very well, Udo. I cannot always be there to correct your tongue, so heed these words. Gerald has been Dittmar's man since the beginning, before the usurpation of Christoph, before Baldovinus, in fact. In the beginning, Dittmar was only a minor lord of little note in a poor little country called Ostenbezirk. The country was poor, as I said, because the land was poor. Nearly all of it was fen, packed with more rock than soil, and nearly nothing would grow there besides the peat and heather, and that heather only in the small places where the rocks were scarce. His own holdfast was on the banks of the Fulda, and his people lived on the fish taken from the Fulda's waters, and not much else. Now, despite the mean nature of his holdings, Dittmar was and is still a rather patriotic man. He often hosted public feasts for the clerus, where he would invite them to speak publicly on the superiority of the Teodiscan way and the glory of its people. Oh, yeah, it's great, I agreed. Yes. Look, the point of all this is to say that he placed high emphasis on the safety of his people, because, as you might imagine, their mistreatment would paint his narrative as a lie. And also, between you and me, I think he really believes it. But that's here nor there. So, Dittmar has a healthy concern for his people's safety, which is why it is a problem of, great importance when Petren's lads come to occupy the region. I'm assuming you've heard of, sure, the bandit gang. Oh, well, gang at first. Growing, though. Have they grown long enough, soon an army, eh? It isn't a wealthy region. Probably why they settled there. Trying to avoid, shall we say, royal attention. Therefore, Dittmar's resources for combating the problem are limited. Thankfully, the man is clever. He elevates common vassals to high stations of power, paying them in land rather than currency. Never mind that most of the land was worthless. It was still more than any of them had. But more than that, along with their elevation came the ability to collect taxes, and this was quite the carrot, eh? He strikes a bargain with them all, our king. He reduces the taxes payable to his own person to a bare pittance, and commands them only to maintain the safety of their territories and roads. Now word gets out to the neighboring counties, sped on its way by Dittmar himself, I'm sure. Farmers from other regions, many of them veterans, begin to flock to Ostenbezirk to pledge their service. One of these men was Gerald, the man you will one day serve, officially. The sounds of the carriage became very woodlike, so I peeked out the window. I saw we were on the main bridge back to Ing's fortress and let the curtain settle. Hanman continued on as if he had my full attention, almost as if he was reciting a history to himself for the sake of practice. Petren and his bandits are aware now of these new developments and seek to waylay visitors on the road. They take Gerald and his family, brutalize them. Brutalize them as they brutalize them all. Send the survivors away with the same message. Allegiance to Dittmar is death. Gerald was one such survivor, yet he was not deterred. I cannot say if this is true, as I was not yet interested in Dittmar in these days, but the stories have always held that Gerald's resolve never waned, even when they strung his young wife up by her own intestines and drowned his children in the river. No. Gerald is a man who is not deterred, intimidated, or reasoned with ever. These are the lessons most important for you to learn, Udo. Are you listening? Yes, Yes, very much so. Good. Wait a while now as we exit the carriage. We should not continue this discussion where others can hear. Several people scurried over to Hanman as we emerged into the courtyard. Sunna's light was powerful that day, making all of our shadows sharp on the cobbles. They ran over babbling, always babbling about something. And for a wonder, they seemed to bow at me as much as they did to him. I guess it had to do with me riding around with him all day, but I sure didn't like it, whatever their reasons. He laughed out a few orders. He was always laughing at times like that, probably because of how quickly they scrambled to his bidding. And not long after, we were in the back halls of the keep again, moving through cramped passages and ducking our heads under low overhangs. Pretty soon, I was thoroughly lost and berated myself for losing the way. Then I realized we followed yet a new path I'd never seen before, and that this path was devoid of servants. It was only Hanman and me, our echoing footsteps hiding our soft words. At one point, he pulled a torch from the wall and dipped a hand into his robes. When he removed it, he held some sort of device in his hands. It was made of metal, entirely black, so maybe iron. Only it didn't behave like iron. It bent easily when he squeezed it. He held it over the torch and squeezed two or three times, and each time he did, I heard the sound of rocks scraping together. A shower of sparks poured from his hand each time he squeezed, and soon the torch was alive. I watched as drips fell like flaming tears from the ignited head to sizzle upon his gloved hand. They seemed to whistle softly when they fell. Hanman continued as if he'd never stopped. Gerald finds a way through to Dittmar's holdfast and pledges his service. He begs specifically to avenge himself on the bandits in Dittmar's name. Dittmar, ever the eye for spotting true talent, recognizes the savagery that lives in Gerald, and so their long relationship begins. Gerald the Mad launches a campaign of pure terror against Petrin's lads. He posts notice throughout the territory that any locals found to provide succor to the lads will be considered a part of their number and executed. Their property is to be seized, and their families are to be made destitute. Some of these are wrongfully accused, most likely, but even so, the property Gerald acquires under this new initiative is used as payment for his informers, a network that grows each day. Do you see how this works? I begin to, I said. I dare say Petrin did too. They tried to counter Gerald's policies by sharing their plunder with the locals, but it's far too late by then. The Ostend Berserkers have a long memory, and the lads have a long history of barbarism. 3 months after Gerald the Mad's appointment, then, the command structure of Petrin's outlaws are all but in chains, and Petrin himself follows soon after, rooted out finally from an egg farmer's refuse wallow. All of the lads, and the poor farmer come to that, are locked into 4 separate cages on the highest hill in the county, doused in oils, and are burned alive. I'm told this was visible for many mile and all around. So it was that Gerald the Mad was reborn Gerald of the 4 Fires, a name of which he is fiercely proud. And so it was that a selection of hardened farmers were elevated to knighthood under Dittmar's house. The calloused bastards, I muttered. Just so. Though most think they are calloused in their hearts. Those closest to them know their name refers to all calluses on their hands, earned from long years of toil at the plow. You may be assured that they do not make it a point to correct this misconception. Obviously, I said. That's quite a story, Yeah, quite. I'm not sure why I had to hear it. Only so that you understand the man you will soon be dealing with, Udo. Well, shit, I don't want to now. He sounds like a lunatic. A predictable lunatic, as I said. As you said. If you say so. I do. Rest your fears, my boy. I will be there to guide you. He smiled at me in the warm fashion, his eyebrow cocked the way I liked, the way that told me it would be well. I was pleased to believe him. Through that door now, Udo. He gestured with the torch, and I saw an iron ring set into the stone. It was pitted in rust, and looked as though it hadn't even been thought of in 100 years. A door, huh? Pull the ring. I did. He was right. It was an honest, goddamn door. It slid open silently, and yet it looked like a whole section of stone wall, all of it mortared bricks, just swinging right open. Hanman gestured with the torch again, indicating that I should step through. It was his chamber, his solarium, rather. We entered from a strange direction, and I realized the door would be hidden after it was closed. His desk was in front of me, only now I saw it from the other direction, with the hole for his legs resembling a dark cavern. Risa was sitting on the couch at the other end of the room, closest to the door that was actually visible. And when he saw me enter, he put down the book he'd been reading and stood.
Udo, welcome. You've been told everything, I presume.
I heard Hanman's voice from somewhere behind me. It sounded very far away, and I don't recall what he said anymore. It was something like, "Not everything, Risa. We'll all have that conversation together." Something like that. I wasn't paying much attention to him then. Risa nodded and resumed his place on the couch. He retrieved the book, opened it, ran a finger down the page, and nodded. In his same voice, the voice that sounded of trees falling, of bears fucking, or gods fighting, he said,
"Yes, that is certainly best."
I whirled to stare at Hanman. He was pulling the chair away from his desk to sit down. "Have a seat, Udo," he says, as if the things we had to discuss were of middling concern. I wanted to ask him many things. I wanted to ask them both so many things, but I was stricken as dumb as some of the idiot children you run into sometimes when they're begging on the street. Really, the only thing I noticed was that Hanman had taken off the gloves.